Lutheran Public Radio is now a nonprofit organization. That means all past, present, and future gifts to LPR are tax deductible. Please consider making a gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate by check, make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio, and mail it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also make a tax-deductible gift online, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support.
Jesus told us to love thy neighbor as thyself.
Religious faith, the source of so much inspiration, an excuse for so much evil.
The Torah commands, that which is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow.
I believe restoring religious faith to its rightful place as the guide to our world and its future is itself of the essence.
In Islam, there is the hadith that reads, none of you truly believes until he wishes for his brother what he wishes for himself.
We have every state represented here today, a half a dozen head of states, 182 nations represented.
The same is true for Buddhists and Hindus, for followers of Confucius, and for humanists.
Here we hear talk about a pluralistic society, religiously pluralistic society. There's been a lot of talk about that lately because, of course, it's a fact. And then American civil religion is kind of in tune with the idea that you can pretty much be anything you want to be. This isn't just religious freedom. This is the ability to, without intellectual or spiritual conflict, choose or pick and choose whatever beliefs you want to put together. And there are people who have in the past claimed to hold more than one faith at the same time. We're going to be talking about the so-called dual faith of an Episcopalian priest who's been nominated for Bishop of the Diocese of Northern Michigan here for the first few minutes of Issues, etc. Greetings and welcome. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We'll begin with a short conversation on that, and then we're going to do a little sermon review here in this hour of Issues, etc., a Transfiguration sermon preached by Pastor George Borghardt of St. Mark Lutheran Church in Conroe, Texas. Our Issues Etc. sermon reviews are a favorite of our listeners. It's coming up in about 10 minutes. And then to round off today's program, we'll just listen to some of your comments, our listeners' comments on the Issues Etc. listener comment line, and respond. That's all coming up later in this hour. Our call-in number live this Friday, February the 6th, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-6943. Our in-studio email address is talkback@issuesetc.org. James Tonkawinch is president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C. Jim, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
This dual-faith Episcopalian priest, he claims to be a Christian Zen Buddhist. Is this the first instance of this in the Episcopal Church USA, a claimed dual-faith?
Actually, there are two other instances that we know of. In 2004, we found a priest named Bill Melnick, who was also a Druid. And in 2007, Seattle priest Anne Holmes Redding declared that she was a good Episcopalian and a good Muslim as well.
Okay, so how does the Episcopal Church USA deal with this, other than apparently putting them forward, putting people of dual faith forward as candidates for bishop?
Well, the Melnick and Redding were both inhibited from their priestly duties. They were given a time out, if you will, from their work as ordained clergy. So there was discipline applied in those cases. In this case, Forster's bishop has actually introduced him as someone who practices both Zen Buddhism and Christianity.
I'm wondering if there are, I mean, I know that the Episcopal Church USA, as part of the Greater Anglican Communion, has a fair body, a corpus of church law. Is this something that's even contemplated in church law with regard to the elevation of bishops?
Oh no, this is way out of accord with any kind of canonical law. He's not simply a Zen Buddhist; he's ordained as a Zen Buddhist clergy. And that's I doubt it is against the law simply because no one ever thought of excluding that from the law because nobody ever thought it could happen.
What does it say about the current state of the Episcopal Church USA that the only person nominated in this case for bishop of a diocese calls himself a Christian Buddhist?
Well, the Episcopal Church, really starting back in the 60s with Bishop James Pike, has been very sloppy in their application of discipline. Pike was involved in all sorts of other religious practices. He was involved in the occult. He denied one Orthodox Christian point of doctrine after another. And he remained a bishop in good standing in the Episcopal Church. Now, he was shocking, and everyone was amazed. The difficulty today is it's hard to get quite so worked up because that sort of thing seems to happen all the time. And I think one of the results of that is the number of not only parishioners, but ministers, churches, and even whole dioceses who've left the Episcopal Church to go elsewhere to more Orthodox bodies.
I mean, this certainly has to be confirming for those who have been distressed by the theological direction of the Episcopal Church USA and who have finally mustered the courage to make a formal break of sorts with it, whether they be individual congregations or dioceses. It certainly has to be something of a confirmation that their decision was not hasty and probably, perhaps, overdue.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it makes me think of a friend of mine who these sorts of things would tie him in knots when he was a member of the Episcopal Church. And he left probably 10 years ago. And, you know, he still is shocked and he still is deeply saddened, but it doesn't tie him in a knot. And he's glad to be someplace else.
I read in the news account that the Diocese of Northern Michigan, the one in question, has what's called a particular theological process that it uses to call a bishop based upon the mutual ministry model. And the bishop there, Matthew, said he'd been monitoring the process. I mean, if you could take a guess, how do you think this is going to come out?
If I'm going to take a guess, I would say that he may be named bishop. The question is that then he has to be approved by the House of Bishops. And the question will be, and it'll be a it'll be a watershed. Does the House of Bishops, is the House of Bishops sufficiently faithful to say, this is ridiculous and disapprove it? And that'll be a watershed, whether they do or not.
Well, it was only a couple of years ago that the House of Bishops approved the consecration of Gene Robinson, the first openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church USA. That was an uproar. Would this uproar meet or exceed that if it comes to that?
I don't know. It won't have the kind of uproar that the consecration of Gene Robinson had. And I say that for two reasons. One, some of the shock value is gone. Number two, Robinson, 30 years ago, I had Episcopal priest friends telling me, when it comes to gay marriages and so on and so forth, I am out the door. I will stay here, but I'm out the door. People announced 30 years ago that this was the tipping point for them, and Gene Robinson was a step over the line. It hit the tipping point, and people have been streaming out ever since. I think the question of homosexuality within the clergy and the approval and the normalization of homosexuality, I think that's a real tipping point issue in the churches. And I think it's not only true in the Episcopal Church. I think you're going to find that across the boards.
James Tonkowicz is president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C. You'll find a link to the Institute on Religion and Democracy under the on-demand page at our website, issuesetc.org. Jim, thanks for being our guest.
My pleasure, Todd. God bless you and have a good weekend.
Well, when they're done trying to shock everybody and reaching the next tipping point after the next tipping point, one wonders with the Episcopal Church USA whether there'll be anyone left to be shocked or tipped.